everybody. Good evening. I'm here with Angela and four other folks because we're going to talk about the crisis in Haiti tonight. And we usually start these programs off with a comment on what's going on. I got a brief one. You know, there's a lot of good in that COVID relief package, but I was kind of disgusted last night when I heard Biden saying, we're eliminating or reducing child poverty in half. And my question is, why half? I mean, in my city, American Community Survey that the US Census Bureau does consistently finds that 50 to 60% of our children are poor. So why are we only bringing half of them out of poverty? I mean, I don't think that's something you can brag about. That's something you can say we're only partway there. So that's my comment for tonight. So I'm gonna kick it over to you, Angela.
I know, I mean, why do half measures? But then again, you know, we kind of expected that to happen with this administration. So I'm not even touching that. We're gonna include in the chat this fire podcast. If y'all are not following Jason Miles and Pascal Robert on This Is Revolution podcast, I really, really need y'all to do it. I mean, consistently fire. And their newest episode, I want to say uploaded a couple days ago, and it is with Andres Malm, who is Swedish, an eco-Leninist, which I was jumping for joy in my truck. And he's coming out with a book, or just came out, Corona, Climate, and Chronic Emergency, War Communism for the 21st Century. Making these linkages between capitalism, climate change, and the rise of fascism worldwide in a way that is fiery, approachable, and just what we need to be hearing. So, you know, we said eco-socialists. We're eco-socialists in this house. So to hear someone else say it, you know, is pretty exciting. And also, just give y'all a heads up, we are doing Women's History Month programming. I am at some point this week going to make a trigger warning for next week because, you know, it's a very sensitive topic. We might have family that are going to need to sit that one out. So I will let y'all know. Yeah. And so without any further ado, I get the honor of introducing y'all to the amazing people that are joining us tonight. And of course, y'all know Dr. Margaret Flowers, our family, who is the director of Popular Resistance. And Popular Resistance is a convener with the Black Alliance for Peace, of which I am a member, of the U.S. UN Out of Haiti group. And Netfa Freeman, who I had the honor of being on his podcast, is on the coordinating committee of the Black Alliance for Peace and is an organizer in Pan-African Community Action, PACA, which is a member organization of Black Alliance for Peace. And he is also co-host and producer of the WPFW radio show and podcast Voices with Vision, and a good friend of my friend, Alicia Skeeter, my homie. Tom is a socialist, Lord. Tom is an organizer. Well, you are a socialist. I mean, yeah. Another one of our family members, organizer with the Green Socialist Organizing Project, co-chair of the Green Party of New Jersey, and served as a development officer with the Development Office of the Episcopal Church in Haiti from 1985 to 1987. And last, we've got Danny Shaw, who teaches Latin American and Caribbean studies at the City University of New York and is a senior research fellow at the Council on Hemispheric Affairs and just returned from Haiti. So I am giving the floor to y'all. Honored that you're here with us.
Great. Thank you so much, Hallie and Angela. And I was chosen to start out, so I'll give a little bit of an overview of the U.S. UN Out of Haiti group. This is a kind of an informal group that's come together because of the crisis that's going on in Haiti right now. And in the weeks leading up to the time when Jovenel Moïse, who served as the president, his term ended on February 7th, and in months prior to that, and actually throughout his whole term, there has been pushback because Jovenel Moïse was put into power as the president of Haiti, not through a very democratic process, but through US intervention and force, as was the case for the president before that, Michel Martelly. And so his term ended on February 7th. there was, you know, broad agreement by the legal community in Haiti that that was what the Constitution says. He refused to leave office. There was a lot of protests going on prior to that, calling for him to leave when his term ended. And he stayed and has responded to the protests with severe state repression from police, military, and gangs that actually work with the government. And so, as I'm sure Danny will describe to you from his recent trip there, it's a very repressive environment that the United States is backing. The Biden administration's State Department put out a statement of support for Jovenel Moïse staying in office. So this is really, you know, so hypocritical that the, you know, the Democrats have been all up in arms about the fact that Trump was saying that he wasn't going to leave office when his term ended, but yet here they're openly supporting someone who's refusing to leave office and is also repressing people who are calling that out. And part of the big reason why the U.S. is supporting him is that the United States, what's called the core group, which are Western imperialist nations and institutions, it's the United States, Canada, Brazil, Spain, France, European Union, the Organization of American States, which is really a U.S.-dominated institution, are all helping to write a new constitution for Haiti that will take power away from the people and give more power to the presidency. And Jovenel Moïse is ruling by decree right now. He refused to hold elections for the parliament and has dismissed most of the legislators when their terms ended. And so he's basically the sole ruling ruler of Haiti right now. So folks were calling out to us, you know, about what was going on from Haiti, and Ajamu Baraka through Black Alliance for Peace and Popular Resistance thought, well, we need to get as many organizations as we can in the U.S. coordinating our efforts, because so many of us, of course, would be working on this issue, but we felt like it would be much stronger if we had a coordinated effort. So we've been meeting pretty regularly. We did a sign-on letter that had now over 1,000 signatures on that, calling for the U.S. to stop interfering in Haiti. And there have been mass protests going on down there, especially on Sundays, huge protests going on. And so, and there have been some protests here, but we're calling for a weekend of action, March 27th to the 29th. March 29th is the anniversary of the 1987 Haitian Constitution, written after the overthrow of Jean-Claude Duvalier, or Baby Doc. And so that seems like a fitting anniversary. And so we're encouraging people to organize a protest or join a protest in your community. This is just getting off the ground, so people are putting together logistics, and we hope to be able to report a number of cities very soon. But if you want to get more information about that, I'll put it in the chat, but basically there's a short link. It's bit.ly/Haiti with a capital H, MAR with a capital M, 27-29. So it's bit.ly/Haiti, MAR 27-29. And you can get more information and submit an action and find out where to find an action there. So I'll stop there. And I know folks, everyone on this call has a lot to say, and I look forward to the discussion afterwards. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Flowers.
So I just, it's me next. Okay. Thank you for inviting me. Welcome to everybody who's watching the broadcast this evening. My name is Netfa Freeman. I'm with the Black Alliance for Peace. So just to talk about a few things, giving the perspective of the Black Alliance for Peace, is that we see this as a necessary, we see mobilizing and organizing around Haiti as really a necessary, I won't say a litmus test, but maybe that's the word, in terms of trying to get break the Americanism, basically, that's imposed on Black people and people of African descent in the U.S. to make us believe that the situations and the circumstances and the policies that are leveled against Black people in other places in the world are don't affect us, don't have anything to do with us. That's a problem. We want to break that just as well as we want to break that on the other side, the inverse of that, where people look at what's happening to us here on the African continent or in the Black world and other Black countries and may think it doesn't have to do with you. In fact, other outside of the United States, it's a much better expression of solidarity with African people in the United States. I'm a Pan-Africanist, so when I say African people, I'm talking about Black people. Just in case anybody gets confused about that, I use them interchangeably and synonymously. But when it comes to Haiti, and particularly around Haiti, in spite of all the struggles that Haiti has gone through over the centuries, because ever since Africans were enslaved by European, the French, to bring in this hemisphere, and also Spanish, and Haiti being the first liberated republic in this hemisphere, all the way back in the 1700s, it was able to inspire revolutions in this hemisphere, as first black republic in this hemisphere, to also the first black republic, period, to abolish slavery and actually encourage abolition, a slavery abolition, anti-slavery abolition movement in the whole world, but particularly in this hemisphere. So right now, Haiti's been having to bear the brunt of, I guess, a resentment, or, you know, of Europeans not wanting, you know, the resistance of Haiti, despite, you know, resisting them and charting a path of self-determination. So we feel that it's our obligation to respond to our sisters and brothers in Haiti and reciprocate the solidarity that they've shown us. Haiti and U.S. policy toward Haiti in particular exposes the hypocrisy in the United States that we're bombarded with all the time, all these platitudes of Black Lives Matter and democracy. And here we see in Haiti, even under Biden, after coming into office, sort of insinuated support for Jovenel Moise, in spite of the fact that he's illegitimate right now and has no constitutional authority, in spite of the fact that Biden and this whole duopoly, Republicans and Democratic Party, talks about democracy. And on the Democratic side, they feign concern for Black lives, and we can see that it's just politician talk, empty noises. We also know that it's our responsibility, and this is how I think it really pertains to the situation, or how Haiti's situation really pertains to us, is that sometimes things are termed, and a lot of times Haiti's treated just like the African continent is treated, especially with the malignment and misinformation of the complexities of what's happening on the ground. We hear often that it's reduced to a dictator, you know, the Black people that can't get themselves together, and they have this Moise now is there, and he's repressing his people, and it's about, without looking at the international context, the neo-colonial context that really is at the root and behind everything that happens in that country and on other places. So we need to expose these institutions that are put out here as benevolent, having some sort of benevolent mission and serving some benevolent purpose. For example, the United Nations, for example, the OAS, for example, even the United States going in, they're giving military aid and police training and police equipment to the repression that's happening on the ground. The peacekeepers, UN peacekeepers, are actually committing atrocities against the people and called peacekeepers and sent there as a mission, supposedly with some kind of benevolent intent. So we have to expose this and make sure that this whole narrative, that it's about this dictator that won't leave power, is, and it's not anything more than that. We have to expose that. And that's part of what we're doing here. So Haiti is under occupation. It should be seen as something that's under occupation. It's directly under occupation, just like we would see Palestine or any place else. And that is how we have to approach it. It also represents the U.S. policy and the Western policy of the West in terms of Haiti, but particularly United States with its Monroe Doctrine exposed the racism, the essential racism of the Monroe Doctrine. And also, you know, that's what I was going to say, expose the racism of the Monroe Doctrine, and they're often treating the country like they would treat any other African peoples, even in the United States. So we have to actually look for these parallels. African people in the U.S. or everywhere really are a colonized people. Our relationship, we're not talking about colonies as something that this relevant in terms of geographical area. Colonization is a disposition, a power relationship between colonized and colonizer, no matter how far apart or close those two entities are to each other. And so in the United States, we face the same police repression, and maybe it's more intensified in Haiti. And we should learn from the valiant resistance of the Haitian people, and also forge ties where we can actually show what's happening to our people there and to our people here. Black Alliance of Peace has amassed, and I'll end this with amassed a number of resources that will allow us to talk about the Haiti, a fact sheet, a statement, different things that talk about the Haitian workers in Alabama. And so we're making these connections. So if people go to blackallianceforpeace.com/Haiti, you'll see all the resources there. We have posted some of the media interviews we've done, podcasts, articles that people have written that are part of the Haiti team that we have. And oh, last is that on the lead up to the action that Margaret mentioned on March 28th, we're organizing something in the interim here in the Washington, D.C. area where I live. March 15th, we'll be organizing a mobilization at the OAS. The OAS doesn't get off the hook. We're going to go to the OAS just like we did the Haitian embassy about a week ago. And we want people who are in the vicinity to join us, and we'll have more information about that forthcoming. Thank you.
Thanks, Netva. I really always appreciate your incredible insight. I'm approaching this a little bit differently in that I first went to Haiti in 1985, really as a political ingenue. I just had the opportunity to go, and fortunately, I found a place working for Father Yvonne Francois in the development office, who I cut my teeth on development as true development for the people, against the NGO industrial complex, anti-imperialist. So I did have the opportunity to really learn, because I was a blank slate, very much a blank slate. What I really want to talk about briefly is just my experience during a popular uprising, be it when I went there in 1985, Jean-Claude Duvalier, Baby Doc, was still president of V, president for life, that he had inherited, I guess you'd say, from his father, Papa Doc Francois Duvalier, when he was, I believe, 15 years old. And for a person that looks like me, it was a very calm situation. But for the majority of people, it was quite a difficult situation. And back then, we didn't have the internet as such. There was no social media. So the main way that people found out about what was going on throughout the country was on the radio. And the main radio station was called Radio Soleil. And there was this cat and mouse between the Duvalier government and Radio Soleil that was run by Belgian priests. It was broadcast in Creole so that people could truly understand what was going on, because only a small minority actually are fluent in French. So it would become popular. The Duvalier regime would shut it down. There would be protests. It would open up again. And this dynamic is still going on today that Danny will speak about after me. And another way was via telephone. Again, I was fortunate to work with Father Francois. And I recall many times he would be on the phone, working the phones until early in the evening, trying to figure out what this meant or what it could mean. It was really a master's class in real politic and seeing how things happen, because it wasn't written and it wasn't on any radio station except for, like I said, Radio Soleil and Creole. The actual experience of seeing protests for the first time, I didn't actively participate in them because that wasn't my place, but I was out among it. And just the visceral experience of the burning tires, that I'm sure, Danny, you smelt when you were down there a week or so ago. The people marching, chanting, singing, hundreds of thousands of people, things that we just don't see here. But for the Haitian people, for the longest time, this is the way they have to bring about justice, self-determination. And as Netflix said, it's not always just the leader, but it's the neoliberal imperialist mode that the dictator is also a puppet in. And I recall one situation where things were really getting heavy and we had curfews at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. People couldn't meet in groups. And this went on for months. And we all had the feeling that this was really untenable and that something was going to happen. If you ventured out during the day, it was very dangerous. I recall a time when I brought two workers back to the farm out in Laogon, about 30 miles outside of Port-au-Prince, and we had to navigate through narrow streets because they were being blocked by burning tires. And then we heard the fire of a semi-automatic gunfire and had no idea where it was coming from with all the smoke, and we all buried our heads between our knees. And this, I remember it to this day, this big army jeep rolled up and this officer with all these medals said to me in perfect English, "Are you afraid?" And I said, what do you think? But just trying to give you a feeling of what it's really like to go through a popular uprising in a country where it's, you know, we're a lot of us on this call are probably activists and go out and protest. And it's very important to really see it up close and personal like this. I was able to do almost 40 years ago. And then going back 90 to 91 during the Aristide regime. It was just an incredible experience. And I throw it to Danny now to talk more about his recent trip there.
Good evening. Thanks so much for organizing this. When this latest struggle broke out, I've worked with the Haitian left, the anti-imperialist forces on the ground in Okap-Haïtien and Port-au-Prince since 1998. When I lived in the Dominican Republic and worked with El Movimiento Popular Dominicano, Marxista-Leninista, and living in DR, you can't help but be confronted by the everyday oppression of the Haitian community, el anti-Haitianismo, anti-Haitian racism and hysteria. So that was my introduction to the left in Haiti in 1998. So when the latest struggle broke out, they were in touch with me. And they pitched it as this is the front lines of the battle of ideas. And of course, the Western press, forget giving critical coverage, they're not giving any coverage. You know, in the words of one Haitian leader, if this was Hong Kong or Taiwan, then BBC and CNN would be on the ground. But this is Haiti. This is a neo-colony. So they could care less. So the Partizano, Camarado, they called upon me. And some Bolivarian journalists. There's a good network through Via Campesina in Nicaragua and Brazil in the MST, the Movement of the Landless, with some other critical journalists or anti-imperialist journalists who are fluent in Haitian Creole, so we could get on the ground there and cover what wasn't being covered and make sure that there was an anti-imperialist view to give platforms to the Haitian progressives, the socialists, the revolutionaries, the anti-imperialists. As Margaret pointed out, there is this confederation of gangs, paramilitary gangs that spread across Port-au-Prince and the country. So there's a battle for hegemony in some of the neighborhoods of Port-au-Prince. You couldn't be safer because you're in a revolutionary stronghold. But if you try to cross Port-au-Prince, there is this epidemic of kidnapping. They've used kidnapping as a political weapon. So this battle for hegemony plays out. I stayed clearly in one of the revolutionary strongholds in Fort Nacional, where there is anti-imperialist graffiti and poetry and placards that cover the neighborhood. The police don't dare to go in there. But the repression in terms of the demonstrations, whether it's a mass demonstration of 100,000 or smaller student-led demonstrations demanding the release of a kidnapped student. Just last week, two Dominican cameramen were released who were kidnapped, as well as un dirigeant étudiant qui est le Tineg. They were released last week by these gangs. And the police would show up in front of the demonstrations, big or small, and they were the very images that Tom described. The bullets, the tear gas whizzing by your ears, and the people on the run are at times trying to defend themselves. So this transition, that's what the Haitian people are demanding. Just like Michel Martelly, Jovenel Moïse, et un tissu sous blanc, that means he's a sellout. He's a ben de patria. He's in the pocket of the true troika of tyranny, the OAS, the UN, and the US, and their junior imperialist partners. So the Haitians are demanding that they control the transition, that it's not Madame Lalime or Madame Sisson, the US representative to the ambassador to Haiti, and then the UN ambassador to Haiti. They should not be the ones to control the transition. This has to be a people-led transition. The Haitian people are a highly internationalist and anti-imperialist people. The placards that they made and the messaging was often in four or five languages, true to their form. Many of the Haitians are polyglots, speaking four languages or more. So to see so much messaging in English, in Spanish, and of course, French and Creole, in other languages to get the message out to the world, so that Haiti is not isolated. I wanted to show some images so that the Haitian people can, of course, speak to us directly. That was my role there. Let's see how the sharing goes. Can you see the image at least? The So hopefully you were able to see that. I could see it clearly. My assumption is that everyone saw that and heard that, but perhaps not. But what the Haitian leaders were saying was that they clearly can identify that these tyrants are in the pocket of the U.S. and the OAS. The word they used is chul or puppet. Right after that scene, that was Sunday, the leader there, Laporte, was actually shot by the Haitian police. So that's why I wanted to document that. Unfortunately, it looks like we couldn't see it. So I'll put my Twitter in the chat, Danny Shaw CUNY, so you can see the footage with your own eyes. And I'll just end by saying, before we open it back up to Howie and Angela and to the people for questions, the Haitian people, the masses, reject the notion of the NGO industrial complex, the charity complex, the missionary complex that Tom highlighted. They believe in solidarity. So we've set up different people-to-people solidarity funds, because for the Haitians to wage this battle of ideas, as the Cuban leadership says, this informational war, they need internet. They need social media platforms to speak to the world. So thank you for organizing this event and this international solidarity. Anti-imperialist consciousness is more important than ever.
Thank you, Danny. Thank you, everybody. The thing that I really wanted to say, you know, especially with what you just said, because that was one of the questions in the chat, you know, from one of our Green family that wanted to know specifically, I think that was you, Diane, you know, how do we help the Green Party in its efforts? Oh, it's Gera. Hey, baby. Howie and Angela, my only question for later would be, is there anything, and y'all can answer this, you know, jump right in. Is there anything that the Green Party can do to help those unfairly deported to Haiti and or the Haitian people? So anybody that wants to speak on that, please do.
Well, I'll start since nobody's jumping in, but I'm sure everybody has something to say about this. You know, so a big thing is just raising awareness of what's going on down there. It's not really, as I think others said, it's not really getting out there in the mainstream media that this is what's going on. And so spreading the word in your communities, letters to the editor, and actually we'll be meeting on Thursday to discuss how we can help support folks to get the word out in the week leading up to the weekend of action. We're going to be doing a couple of days of media action leading up to it, providing talking points, sample letter to the editor that people can use. You could be, you know, contacting your local media. Why aren't they covering this? Using your social media to pressure to get more coverage for this. We've got to point out how the Democrats were so critical of Trump for saying that he was going to refuse to leave office, and that they're backing somebody who's literally refusing to leave office. As NEPA said, that, you know, the Democrats give lip service to Black lives, but here they are supporting repression and violence against people in Haiti. So getting the word out, organizing actions, you know, if you can do the 27th to 29th, even if it's a visibility action, that's great. Even if it's just a few people, we just need to be getting out there. And then, you know, donating, as Danny set up this great fund to support activists down there. These are key things that we can all be doing. Now, you mentioned deportations, and that's part of our demand as well. And in Florida recently, they had a protest outside of the ICE with the Haitian community from Little Haiti down there came out and protested at ICE because people have been getting deported to Haiti, including young children and infants. And, you know, people are fleeing there because of the violence and the situation. They're, you know, justifiably fleeing. So, you know, if March 27th, 29th, you want to do an action at the, an ICE building or, you know, customs building in your community, that would also be appropriate. That's part of the message. The main message is U.S. out. And we, as people who live in the United States, have that responsibility to call upon our government to leave Haiti alone, to stop interfering. I'm sure others can jump in.
I would also add, if you're asking about the Green Party, I know the Green Party of New Jersey signed on to the letter Margaret had referenced in the beginning of the show. I would encourage all state parties to do that and, join this effort. You know, the more people involved and know what actions are going on. Like Margaret said, there's actions the week of the 27th, 28th, 29th, and there's constantly new actions being added. We do need to get our voices out there, and I think all state parties should join this effort.
Yeah, I would just add on protecting the Haitians who are being deported, Biden could expand the temporary protected status of Haitians, which is hard to get the status now, or too hard. And he should just extend it to all Haitians while this crisis is going on. So, you know, flood the White House with that message. Maybe it'll get some results.
I can jump in as well. The hypocrisy of the White House with TPS being extended to Venezuelans as part of the hybrid all-out war on Venezuela, whether it's Biden, Bush, Obama, Trump, it's an unfettered war against the Venezuelan people. So we see, in the words of Malcolm X, this is not a democracy, this is a hypocrisy with this double standard towards immigrants, weaponizing policy where the Statue of Liberty has the right hand up saying that Cubans and Venezuelans, anyone escaping blockaded sanctioned countries, there's a different measuring stick for them. But if you come from Haiti, just like the 1980s, if you come from Central America and the other countries that have been colonized and recolonized, then the Statue of Liberty puts up a hand telling you to stop in your tracks.
I think it's important to know that. And I think that when we're talking about like we've done some work around, you know, Pan-Africanism and had, you know, our whole series last month. It's one of the things that we focused on. And just thinking about, you know, for folks here who are involved in the movement for Black Lives, however, you know, that shows up. We're not just talking about the Black lives within the borders of this country. It is absolutely imperative that we are aware of what is happening because of US aggression in other countries around the world that are Black and brown. And when we're talking about immigration, which the podcast episode that I gave y'all the link to at the top of the show, Jason Miles, what's up, man? They really have a wonderful discussion about that in there, about the fact that here in the United States, we have a real short historical memory, and we don't like to pay attention to the fact that these things happen because the US is destabilizing people's countries and causing people to have to leave because of violence and other things that are happening. So, you know, for our family here, just making sure that we're making those linkages that this is our problem.
Yeah, if I could also just add in terms of the internationalism and the Pan-Africanism, because especially what Angela said, I actually had the privilege, this pandemic time has fly for some reason, but it was in the end of 2019 to go to Venezuela, Caracas, for an international conference of people of African descent. Haiti people were there, people from all over Latin America and Africa. One thing I think that the system tries to do to us is to, in its isolation, is to not help us, not allow us to realize how close we actually are to building certain formidable solidarity steps. Outside the U.S., the people, and like Danny talked about, I mean, that was really encouraging to hear how the people are. So there's a highly politicized and revolutionary politicized sector in Haiti. They're the same place in other countries like Venezuela, Bolivia, Cuba, and that there's a large population of people of African descent, and the forces around building solidarity between indigenous people and people of African descent are real, and that we need to kind of, you know, learn off of that. We should see our denial to make denying us the ability to make these cross, these transcontinental and transnational connections as also an oppression of us. It's a slight against us to not give us the privilege to make connections with our sisters and brothers. I'm primarily focusing or targeting my remarks to people of African descent who might be on this call right now, that the system of white supremacist, capitalist, patriarchal domination intentionally wants to make us to believe that we share mostly, our interests are shared mostly by the dominant paradigm that they have created, and make us think that we don't have as much in common with or interest with other people who may be of African descent. And also we have to put class in it too. And that's very important that we put class in there, that we're talking about working class folks. So we have more in common with working class folks in other countries, and particularly non-white working class folks, than we do with America. Within this Americanism, I've referred to it as Americanism. But anyway, I think that part of isolating us from making these connections is also an attempt. Something done against us. It's an attempt to preserve the global domination, the global system.
Hey, Winnie. Winnie Victor is asking, and this is for anybody that wants to take it, are there any representatives in Congress who are sympathetic to Haiti and would be willing to help? I would like to contact them.
I think one I know of is Yvette Clark has spoken out on this, and maybe other folks know, other members. I know there was some work to try to get, I think, Gregory Meeks to be speaking out. Danny or Netfood, Tom, do you know any?
Oh, I don't have a whole lot of faith in these people. I mean, they talk a good game. The person who's done the most that I know of, and that was back during the 90s when they took Aristide away, was Maxine Waters. And then right now, I know that she's been approached about this now, and that, you know, she's given some sort of, expressed some sort of concern. But right now, I mean, I think the low volume in terms of the voice that they're giving to this shows the genuineness on it. But I do think that we still should be jamming people up. I mean, if they're not showing, expressing some concern, then we need to be doing, you know, we need to be in their face and asking them why, you know. And so, so that's the answer. That's my answer. I don't really know of any that are really doing anything, but that doesn't mean that we can't push people to do something that we shouldn't. We really should.
Now, I'd add Pramila Jayapal, who's chair of the Progressive Caucus. You know, put pressure on her, and it you know, might get that caucus to do something. The problem is Biden's got his honeymoon right now, and Congress don't want to make things difficult for him. So they let a lot of things slide. But, you know, our job is to make sure they can't slide.
That's one of our family here. Hey, Baraka is asking us, it used to be the Congressional Black Caucus, but that was before they shifted to the right. And I'm thinking of you know, here in South Carolina, Diana, you know who I'm talking about, Mr. Clyburn. So, you know, as listening to all of y'all is like, yo, I share how you feel, Ned. I feel like me reaching out to Clyburn, because I believe that is my representation, is spitting in the wind, but it ain't gonna hurt me to do it.
No, I definitely don't think it's, we need to be doing these things. I don't think that, you know, because even if they don't respond, the point is that when we need to be heightening the contradiction for people. And the only way we can heighten the contradiction is for them to see us, you know, in the people, you know, trying to give response and not getting it, and then taking it to the next level.
Yeah, I was, you know, I was quiet for a reason. The level of internationalism and anti-imperialism in Congress is not exactly inspiring. I think that's upon us. Only the people can save the people and organize the people. And it's a particularly internationalist day, as every day should be. 67 years ago today, Bobby Sands was born, one of the Irish hunger strikers, one of the leaders of the Unity for Ireland. Today would have been the 24th birthday of Elder Fernandez, our young Cape Verdean brother who was murdered outside of Fort Hood in Texas back in August. So we have a memorial tonight for Elder Fernandez. But as the Haitians have taught us now for how many centuries, this is a people's struggle. This is about internationalism and anti-imperialism. How can we organize more study groups, organize more internationalist consciousness, more demonstrations, get people out into the streets for this big weekend, the 27th, the 28th, the 29th. So I think the Haitians are leading the way with their unity and their revolutionary optimism. And how can we reciprocate that here in the belly of the beast?
This is exactly what I was making a note of. Task Force on the Americas, welcome. Push for TPS, temporary protective status, with Congress, struggle on all fronts. For folks that may not necessarily know what TPS is, does anyone want to speak to it?
Yeah, it means you can't be deported while you have that status. And you have to apply for it. A lot of Haitians have it, but a lot don't, because they're requirements that Trump tried to make harder. He tried to get rid of it for Haitians. Wasn't able to do that, but, and I don't know the details, but you have to have been here a certain amount of time, and there are deadlines, and it's a bunch of red tape. Right now, these people, if they're being sent back, are put in a crisis situation. So we need to demand, just give all the Haitians TPS, temporary protective status, protected status while the crisis is going on. Just make the demand simple and push.
I can weigh in. I mean, I think it's important right now. Breitbart and the right wing has been pushing this story of a quote unquote migrant crisis of 1,600 quote unquote migrants on the border. And this is Joe Biden's doing. This is Joe Biden's migrant crisis. It's not a migrant crisis. It's an imperialist crisis. It's a crisis of neocolonialism. As long as Haiti is exploited, Haitians are going to be forced to leave their country. This is involuntary migration. They're forced out of their homeland. No different than Honduras and Guatemala and Colombia. So I think, again, in the battle of ideas, we have to make the connections between involuntary migration and imperialism, because to go back to everything Netfo was talking about with all the Americanism and the platitudes about the U.S. has done so much for Haiti, and just the racism and the white supremacy and the Americanism and the jingoism, it's ridiculous. So how do we continue to insert ourselves in this informational war? Because our people are not naturally jingoistic. They're not naturally pro-imperialist. So we have a lot of popular education ahead of us. And in the streets of Port-au-Prince, in the quartier populaire, in the everyday neighborhoods, they have these incredible poetry projects. They have their own, they say militant, that would be like comrade ideological political development schools. So I think we can do a lot more. You know, when conditions are safer, perhaps some type of solidarity, peace, anti-imperialist delegation. I think right now that's not realistic, but hopefully down the line, because so many of our compas over the years have been able to go to Haiti and be épaule sous épaule, shoulder to shoulder with the Haitian national liberation struggle.
Netba, I saw you getting a nudge in the private chat to jump in with what you shared with us.
I'm sorry, I missed to say it out loud, you mean? Oh, so that means that, I didn't know that people couldn't see this. So I'm just typing to you all. Well, I guess I just said that the ruling class, that I was concurring with Danny and just letting people know that, you know, the ruling class uses and levels all forms of media. In fact, when referring to the battle of ideas, is something that, you know, Cuba talks about a lot, because they're realizing the value in ideas and the contested contesting reigns of thought, areas of thought. And that, in fact, the Cubans, I remember saying, ideas are more powerful than weapons, meaning physical weapons. And so when I think of that, it's like when you can control a person's minds and their thinking, then you can control their behavior and what they, how they perceive things. And so right now, all the Americanism is to keep us thinking, having a perception of anything that's contrary to Americanism, or that's, you know, goes against outside of American exceptionalism, and then also thinking those of us who are actually colonized in the U.S. or anywhere, because we're Black people are colonized, indigenous people are colonized here, you know, and that's making us think that we are, like, you know, American, so to speak. And what America means, you know, is very, it's you know, it's just basically white. It's anything that really that demonstrates the settler colonialist, white supremacist capitalist, you know, paradigm and culture and you know, ethos. Rather. So anyway, I'm just saying that the ruling class does spend a lot to try to keep control of our thinking, and we have to be cognizant of that. And that's why what Danny's raising in terms of study groups and all that, that's how we combat that. That's how we keep control, decolonize our minds and keep ourselves straight, is studying together and understanding the complexity and context of things. They want us to do the opposite, just oversimplify, not understand, be disconnected.
Yeah, I was noticing, you know, to kind of add to that, you know, Miss Leo is one of our regular Green Fam. In the U.S., we live in the illusion of democracy. And how are we able to help, and I say this in air quotes, because when have we helped anybody? But anyway, to help other countries when we can't even help ourselves or take a good look in the mirror and point out our own flaws. Child, you said a whole word when you said that. Does anybody want to mess with that? Or take the question, that's what I meant.
Yeah, I would just say that from my perspective of joining the Green Party about close to 5 years ago, we have an obligation as folks who have a left perspective, a socialist, eco-socialist perspective, to speak to that in our country, and also to show comradeship with folks in other countries. So yeah, we know we have a lot of issues here. Absolutely, they're the same issues. But as other speakers have referenced, we have to recognize we have solidarity with other countries, and we have more in common with a lot of these countries. I see that in not only Haiti, Venezuela, Nicaragua, Palestine, and you go down the line, people struggling for their freedom. And it's very similar to our struggle as a minority leftist perspective in the United States. And I think we're just, it's just an obligation. And yeah.
If I could jump in, my partner Kevin Zeese and I used to call a managed democracy or a mirage democracy. It's not an actual democracy. And, you know, we have so much to learn from other countries. I know Danny was with me in Venezuela this past December for the National Assembly elections. And previously on my trip there, I had met with the head of the National Electoral Council, which is a government body, a separate government body that's just in charge of elections in the country. And they have very low barriers to participation by political parties. And so in this National Assembly election, there were 107 political parties that participated. They have a very vibrant democracy in Venezuela in many ways. And we have so much that we can learn from them. And so, you know, we have to, you know, dispel this illusion that the United States has any form of democracy. What we have is, a corporatocracy where, you know, the candidates are chosen and then we get to vote for one of the corporate candidates. And that's not a democracy. And we know that when the U.S. says that it's spreading democracy around the world, that that's a farce, that the U.S. is trying to control other governments, trying to suppress real opposition in other countries. I just interviewed someone from Iraq yesterday about the resistance movement there and how they're fighting to create a democracy in Iraq. The U.S. has been dominating the political process there. But I have to jump off in just a minute, and I'm sorry, but I have something I have to attend, an emergency that came up. But I do really encourage folks to sign on to that sign-on letter at bit.ly/handsoffhaiti, and that will put you onto the email list so you can let you know about actions that are coming up. And if you want more information about the weekend of actions, March 27th to 29th, then go to bit.ly/HaitiMAR27-29. And thank you so much, Howie and Angela, for inviting me to be part of this tonight, and keep up the great work. Thank you.
Bye, thank Margaret. You so much for being here with us.
Yeah, thanks, Margaret. Yeah, I was going to speak to that question. The illusion of democracy, because when we intervene in other countries, they didn't decide that. I mean, like, we're trying to pick the president of Venezuela, some guy who was a backbencher in their national legislature. And our foreign policy's rooted and grows out of our domestic class structure. So the ruling class, they want to exploit us and they want to exploit people abroad. And Haiti, man, Haiti is a case in point. It's the only society in the world where the slaves overthrew the slave masters and took control of their own country. In 1804, the Haitian Revolution was completed. And let me just do a little book plug. If you want to read about that, C.L.R. James' book, The Black Jacobins, is beautifully written. It's so well written, you can listen to it by audiobook, but it's also good to read. And that'll tell you what happened then. And that scared the hell out of our ruling class here, because those slave owners were afraid, particularly in South Carolina, that slaves here were going to get the same idea and overthrow them. And then, you know, for 200 years, the Western powers, France in particular, but the U.S., Britain, and Spain have used Haiti as a cheap labor location. And, you know, things like sugar, manufacturing, you know, light assembly. And so when the Haitians finally had elections in 1991 and elected Jean-Bertrand Aristide, the right wing had a coup. And Aristide came to the United States and, you know, tried to get Clinton to get him back to Haiti, which the Clinton administration did with conditions that they accept IMF austerity rules. And Aristide went back, but then he started breaking the rules. Like several years later, he demanded that France pay back over $20 billion that was gold that the Haitian Republic that had liberated itself from France during the revolution was forced to pay back in the 19th century. And that was too much for the imperialists. So in 2004, they grabbed Aristide, the US military, grabbed Aristide in the morning, he's still in his pajamas, and flew him off to Africa. You know, where's the democracy in that? And we did the same thing to Zelaya in Honduras in 2013. 2004 was the Bush administration. 2013, it was the Obama administration. So I think, you know, the message we got to talk to our people about is that this foreign policy, all this foreign military intervention, this global military empire is doing nothing to protect us. In fact, it's taxing us to protect the rich folks that exploit us. And I think that we got to make that connection between our foreign policy and our domestic issues. And when the military, you know, can get all the money they want, and, you know, like I mentioned at the top, we got, after this COVID thing, half our children are still going to be in poverty. Where's the democracy in that? Because if the people got what they really wanted, if you look at public opinion polls, we'd have totally different policies. So we got to connect the foreign policy to our domestic problems.
Tika Lark. Hey, darling. Good to see you. Tika would like to know, or she put in the chat, I would like the Black left to be kinder to working class Black people. I think that would help. Netfa, and she goes on to say, I mean, not generalizing us so much. Netfa.
Well, thank you for that. Because, yeah, if we generalize it, then we, I mean, I think that there's a good point there in terms of how we see our organizing. And so there's class issues among us. So, and a lot of times, those who are, I guess this is what it said in terms of the Black left, those who are the activists and the activist spaces and whatnot, they tend to be the more formally educated and have a different job. And, you know, that kind of job that's not really associated with the more working class, that kind of thing. And as a result, sometimes and a lot of times, often, too often, we put the focus on, we do the low-hanging fruit, the easy thing to do. And so real work focus on working class would mean us going, you know, going into the communities that are not in what we would call movement spaces, trying to raise our understanding about how to relate, what kind of projects can be built with our people. Actually, we need to defer to some of the things that were done done through the Black radical, the radical Black tradition, and the type of door knocking and mutual aid projects and community control campaigns and, you know, defense of ourselves, those kind of things. And there's a certain skill that comes with that that some people are not willing to, and a certain, you got to get rid of your stereotypes and all that other kind of stuff that some people aren't willing to get rid of, but it's necessary. I mean, we can't get anywhere without doing it. So I agree with the comment. I know that it's not a monolith. I think the person understands that too, because you got some people and some organizations that understand that they're made up of either working class or at least have enough. And when I say working class, I mean, that's complicated in this day and age. It's evolved. but because in terms of it's evolved, we used to think about, you know, the factory worker and all that kind of stuff. But when I define it now, we have to have a more appropriate definition. And that's anybody this in a position in this system to have to sell their labor, whether they actually can do it or not, whether they actually have access to being able to sell their labor or not. Anybody who's not owning and controlling, you know, means of production or just has to do. And so it can be broad. So it can even mean the underworld, people that are doing, you know, stuff that we may not see as, you know, they lumping proletariats or whatever. But anyway, so we have to do that. But also the other point, we're here talking about Haiti and then as an extension, talking about dealing with the working class globally. So the Black radical tradition, you know, when we look at that, has already taken these kind of things into consideration, is tying, and this is what real intersectionality is, right? Looking at the race, gender, class dynamics and how those things affect each other and interrelate. And if we leave out class, I think it's the most overlooked aspect of the intersectional considerations that is the class aspect. And without doing that, when we continue to do it, we can't go anywhere. You know, it's also what develops this comprador class and these neo-colonial puppets that work for, you know, these, you know, work for the governments and the state and the ruling global ruling class. So if we are not looking at class things, it's the kind of stuff that can help us look at all those Black people over there. They just can't get it together. And you know, we leave out the anti-capitalism and the from our anti-imperialism, different things like that. But anyway, I hope I said something that was related to what was said.
Yeah. Like Ms. Leo was saying, the importance of, to borrow the slogan of Anticonquista, I hope everyone can check out Anticonquista on social media, but how do we expose imperialism? Expose imperialism, expose the NGO industrial complex. Every time any country, no matter how big, no matter how small, Grenada has 100,000 people, and look at the US invasion of Grenada in 1983. Look what they did to Nicaragua. Look what they continue to do against Nicaragua. Look at the 2018, what happened in Nicaragua was not a civil war. It was an internationalized conflict. Where did all the funding come from for the Nicaraguan right wing? What they do all day, every day to Venezuela. And the Haitians were the original Bolivarians. If we take it back to the early 1800s, the Bolivarian flag, the Gran Colombia flag, the flag that would become Ecuador, Venezuela, and Colombia's flag. It was sewn in Jacmel in Haiti. And then fast forward 7 years before Chavez's victory in Caracas in Venezuela, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, as Howie correctly laid out, the Haitians had the Deschoucage, the uprising against Duvalier. They set in motion, once again, they were the pioneers. They were at the vanguard of the international struggle with Jean-Bertrand Aristide. And the way the Haitians frame it is there were two Aristides. There was TTT, this liberation theologian who spoke about reparations and defended the people. And then there was the compromised, kidnapped, abducted Aristide, who Clinton and Bush both returned, again, showing that Democrat, Republican, it is unfettered, unwavering, all-out hybrid war against any country, no matter how big, no matter how small, who dares to defy U.S. unipolar hegemonic designs. And one metaphor that the Haitians use a lot, the Haitians are also students of Malcolm X. And when Malcolm talked about, we don't want your crumbs, we want a bakery in which to make our own bread. And that's so relevant because Haiti's never been poor. Haiti's always been oppressed and exploited.
I think that's an absolutely necessary point to make because so many of us in the United States don't understand that, you know, countries that the U.S. has spun, you know, through their propaganda about them as these quote unquote poor countries. It's like, nah, they're not poor. You leave folks alone and let them do what they do. They got this. If we would quit meddling and you know, doing everything that we possibly can to take everything that they have, folks would be all right, you know, and, you know, just thinking about something that I was listening today that was, you know, the U.S., good God, do we have a lot to atone for? Okay, so I want y'all, because I'm not going to keep y'all here all night. So starting with you, Net, because you just had your hand up. Let us have your closing thoughts, thoughts that you want to leave the people with, anything y'all want to plug, anything you got. Let us have it.
Oh, well, I didn't know. Okay, well, what I was raising my hand for is, and this is a little bit, I mean, I struggle with sometimes how we identify with the oppressor, especially when we use these pronouns, inclusive pronouns like we and, you know, but yet we're talking about the class nature of stuff. We are not, you know, occupying or, you know, leveling the policies that, you know, Haiti, but I know what you mean, but I think there's a point where we have to really try to instill the class nature and the class nature of what's going on here. We're going to have to make a delineation between us and those who are actually implementing these policies and benefiting from them. And so I think that, you know, I just think it's something that we'll have to do. But in terms of the closing remarks, I'm glad that we kind of, Haiti right now seems to be the valiance and persistence of the people seem to be getting more attention than I've ever seen it get before. And I think that's important. And then people are seeing through, you know, it's not just get this dictator out, but it's a whole system that we're dealing with, and that, you know, we can be able to identify, and people have already done it, identify, you know, some unambiguous principles of anti-imperialism, anti-capitalism, and self-determination for Haiti, and that, you know, join us in these actions on the 28th, 29th. If you're in the D.C. area, we've got a lead-up one, and we'll also be doing something 28th, 29th, but on the 15th, we'll be at the OAS, bringing light to that. Check out Black Alliance for Peace on blackallianceforpeace.com/Haiti, and forward ever, backward never. No compromise, no retreat.
Thank you so much, Nefa. Danny.
Yeah, that we thing is crazy, because I always tell my students who's we, because we're so conditioned to say that. So good reminder. And I tease my mom. My mom's in the hospital right now, so send all spiritual revolutionary energy her way here in the Bronx. But my mom, who's the one who put, you know, George Jackson and Assa Shakur and Leonard Peltier and Bobby Sands and Don Pedro Albizu Campos in my hands when I was in seventh grade and eighth grade and young. And she'll use the we too, so I always tease her, though she might say I'm too hard on her. But yeah, we have this weekend of solidarity coming up, more educational opportunities. I put the People to People Solidarity fundraiser there in the chat. In the Haitians, where we're building up the social media for the battle of ideas as much as we can. To end with another anti-imperialist slogan, the Venezuelans always say, leales siempre, traidores nunca venceremos, always faithful to the struggle, never sell out, we shall overcome.
Thank you so, so much. And, you know, like I put in the chat, and I know that I'm echoing what a whole lot of folks in our Green family are thinking. We're sending speedy and complete, our wishes for speedy and complete healing for your mom. So that's a big thing. Tom, what you got, baby?
What do I got? Angela, what you just said about people aren't poor, and NetFed said it, and others. That's probably the biggest thing that struck me going to Haiti. And, you know, I have to say, I was pretty open-minded. I didn't have any preconceived notions. And what I found was just an incredible people who persevered. And I got to go throughout the country, going up in the mountains. As Danny knows, they say, de mon gamon, behind every mountain is another mountain. And it was just the greatest experience. And I, what they gave me was, damn, why can't it be like that here? You know, they didn't sugarcoat that they had problems, but people were rich and you could grab that mango or the coffee or, you know, the Wapatot or whatever. So that's what really stuck with me. And I think that's part of that solidarity with other countries, that we can't perceive it through our capitalist imperialist viewfinder, that's not the way other countries see things. And Haiti can teach us a lot. It continues to teach me since I was 23 years old. And I think that's the message that I continue to take away from Haiti.
We appreciate you, Tom. All right, Howie, wrap it on up. You're on mute.
Yeah, I thought you were going to go. I was jotting down a couple notes. But, I mean, what I'm thinking about is how important it is that we challenge U.S. militarism, our huge military budget, our global military empire, the forever wars in the Middle East and North Africa, the idea that Biden is following Trump's policy of picking a guy that has no base in Venezuela to be the president. And then the thing, you know, we kept raising during the campaign was that the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists has their doomsday clock the closest they ever had it to midnight, because we're in a new nuclear arms race. And we're building new tactical weapons and new strategic weapons, and Biden's going forward with that. The Russians and the Chinese are responding. We're off to the races. And we got a climate crisis and we got an arms race, and all that money and all that knowledge and engineers and technicians we're putting into figuring out how to kill each other, we should be putting into, you know, resolving the climate change, building a green, clean energy system. And so none of this was debated in the presidential race, because Angela and I were blanked out, not just by the corporate media, but by the so-called independent progressive media. Nada. We got no coverage. And this issue is life or death. So that's what I'm thinking about. Haiti is one of many instances where what the government is doing is not in the interest of the people. And so since the media won't cover it, as Gil Scott-Heron used to say, the revolution won't be televised, we got to go out in the communities and organize it and organize people around this crucial issue. And, you know, when Martin Luther King came out against the Vietnam War, he was told he was out of his lane. No, he was going down his lane, because, as he pointed out, we lost the war on poverty and the war in Vietnam. So I just think this is such a crucial issue, and everybody should find a way to be engaged in their communities. And the last thing I'll say is we passed 500,000 deaths in COVID because we had a dummy for a president who didn't care about us. And this, you know, downplayed all the public health measures, from masks and social distancing, even vaccines, to PPE for essential workers, to closing down, you know, places that could be super spreader events. And so compared to countries like New Zealand and Vietnam and Singapore, Australia, South Korea, we've had, you know, about 99% more deaths than they had proportion of the population. We're 4% of the world's population. We got 25% of COVID infections. And we're not out of the woods yet. So everybody, you know, keep those public health measures up, get your vaccination, and hopefully we'll all be there in a few months back to normal if we can get everybody vaccinated. So those are my closing thoughts.
No, we'll make it short and sweet. I can't thank our guests enough for joining us tonight. I don't know if y'all have been looking in, you know, the chat. Y'all got a lot of love. And I know I say that, but, you know, y'all got a lot of love. A lot of people are very, very engaged with the discussion that y'all brought here tonight, engaged with the opportunities for action that y'all provided. So, you know, from Howie and me both, we can't thank you enough for being here and making space for us. Also, I am you know, I hope, you know, all of y'all that joined us, you know, because it looks like y'all took a whole lot from this, which really makes me happy. Take them links, take those links and get active wherever you can, however you can. Even if it's just talking to people that you know that may not be aware of this, because I think one of the biggest things, you know, one of the biggest crimes of this idea of American nationalism is that somehow the people who are living within these borders are separate from the harm that this country causes around the world, and that we're insulated from those things, and we are not. What is happening to them is our problem. And it is something that we should be aware of and getting involved in. So that's just me on my little soapbox. Next week, we are going to be talking about something very delicate. I have the pleasure of speaking with Tara Reed and Anika Leonard next week. We will be discussing rape culture, capitalism, and how we get over both of these things, how patriarchy works in movements. It'd be an interesting discussion. And what I want y'all to know about that, you know, this is a sensitive topic for a whole lot of folks. So if you need to, like, you know, check out of it or whatever, I totally get it. But I want to give y'all an advance trigger warning that it could get, you know, it won't be anything explicit discussions, but it's not an easy topic. So I just want y'all to have that in your heads, that that's where we're going with next week. It's something close to my heart. And yeah. So again, thank you to our guests for making space and bringing all of this wisdom to our folks. And everybody have a good night.